Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
It was the best of times. It was the worst.
She was the people's princess.
She'll fight on the beaches.
Away, man. These are the things that made England.
She'll fight on the landing ground.
These are the things that made England.
I have the body but of a weak and feeble woman.
These are the things that made England.
And a king of England, too.
These are the things that made England.
Cry God for Harry!
And these are the things that made England.
England! And St. George!
These are the things that made England.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of The Things What Made England in It Gov. It's a long time since we've been here with you, and I am here with Book Laxter. Hello, Book.
Hello, another spoonerism straight in there. Very good. Yep.
Yes, can't get through a day without a good spoon.
Yeah, it's been even longer that I've been away, so great to be back.
Very good. Or should I call you Lulu rather than Book Laxter?
Well, yeah, you can call me, I'm not a fussy man. Book Laxter, Lulu, anything you like. Okay. Pukey Lukey.
I mean, really is not fussy.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent then, Luke.
Thank you.
So we are here today, gathered together in the sight of, whatever, to... discuss sandwiches.
Sandwiches.
And whether that is a thing that made England. Mm-hmm. Now, I thought we'd start with a little sketch.
Okay.
So imagine the scene. It's the 18th century. We are downstairs in the kitchens of the Prince Regent's Palais.
Oh, this sounds familiar.
And there we've got the king's manservant named Blackadder with his skivvy called Baldric. So... I'm Baldric. I'm Spartacus. I am Blackadder. And you are...
Naturally okay. Enough. Hey.
So, Chalamont. Okay, here we go. Now, Baldric, go to the kitchen and make me something quick and simple to eat, will you? Two slices of bread with something in between.
What? Like Gerald, Lord Sandwich, had the other day?
Yes, a few round of Gerald's. Now that is, that was a very funny joke. Interesting enough, in the making of that sketch, because of course his name that they're referring to is John Montague, the Earl of Sandwich. So his name is actually John rather than Gerald, but they changed the name to Gerald because they didn't think John was very funny.
It's definitely not as funny as Gerald.
Is Gerald a funny
Gerald's
name?
A funny name, sorry. Yes, I mean, my wife was just reading Gerald the Dancing Giraffe to my daughter just as I came upstairs to make this recording. It's funny. John the Dancing Giraffe. Yeah, not so good.
I have a very nice listener called Jerry, short for right. Gerald. So I would like to distance myself from your comments.
Okay. But funny's good. I mean, would Jerry actually prefer to be called John? I doubt it, really.
Oh, no. Maybe we should ask him. Anyway, I'd prefer to be called Bogbrush because that was indeed what I was called. But anyway, let's...
Ah, so that'll be my Lulu to you. Bogbrush.
I'll be Bogbrush to your Lulu. I don't know where we're going with that one. Anyway, where are we? Stop this now.
We've barely begun.
Okay, so Here is the set. What we're going to do is I'm going to talk through a little bit the history of sandwiches and with a few intermissions from you, and then we're going to have a chat and a bit of quizzing, okay? And then we'll make the all-important decision, do we put sandwiches in to cabinet or not?
Go ahead.
Alice Clark? See,
we, yes.
Excellent. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Imagine the scene. We're in a London club in 1762, and a group of very, very posh aristos are gambling madly away, and they are really into it, and they are gambling vast sums of money, because that's what you did in the 18th century. You gambled your entire inheritance away, no matter how rich you were, okay? John Montague, Earl of Sandwich, is there, and he cannot bear to take him away from the table. And so he turns to his man, and he tells him to go and make some food. And his man brings back something expressly designed so that he doesn't get his fingers dirty while he's playing cards.
Incredible. Incredible.
Wow. Beef in between two slices of toast. But there is some controversy about the toast thing. And thus, the sandwich was born.
Dun, dun, dun. Now, the tension you built there was incredible, David. It really was.
And isn't it incredible that the English invented the concept of putting some food between two slices of bread? Isn't that to be something to be celebrated?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, David. I mean, well, can I challenge you yet on this? Or, are we going to wait for a bit? Can I let you just sort of prosaically go on? No, you go ahead. You go ahead. So the English were the first people to put a piece of food between two bits of bread. This is what we're saying. Ever.
Nobody had ever thought of it in thousands of years of human existence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, really, okay. I mean, so what are we going to have? So we're going to have, just imagine, like, two Frenchmen, for example, two Frenchmen who go, oh, have you heard about this revolution gastronomique en Angleterre? En Angleterre? Gastronomique? Non, c'est impossible. Oui, this...
Do you know, this is spooky. Suddenly I feel like I'm in
Biarritz. You're here. We're this Earl of Sandwich. He puts le jambon between two pieces of bread. Le jambon between two pieces of bread. C'est incroyable. Imagine what this means. You could put le fromage dans la baguette. Dans la baguette. Oui, le fromage dans la baguette. And you could take it with you for le pique-nique. So do you really think, the French have been putting stuff between two bits of bread from centuries, presumably. You've got bocadillos in Spain.
I think it probably goes further back yet. And yet, something definitely did happen because people were talking about sandwiches within a couple of years. Yes, some momentous, a seismic shock. So, for example, in the 1760s, Edward Gibbon. Remember Edward Gibbon?
Of Rome fame.
The Climb and Fall Geezer. Yeah. Two of his brothers were also called Edward. Did you know that?
Oh, yes. You always had spare ones, didn't you? In case one...
Yeah, he had spares, and he had two spares. Yeah, in case one clocked him.
Or two.
Anyway, there you go, fab fact. So he wrote in 1760, I dined at the Cocoa Tree. That respectable body affords every evening a sight truly English. 20 or 30 of the first men in the kingdom supping at little tables upon a bit of cold meat or a sandwich.
What year was that then?
I think that's since 1765, but don't quote
me. So very quickly it became known as a sandwich.
Very, very quickly indeed it became known as a sandwich. Having said that, I looked up some encyclopedia of food stuff, and you are quite right. It says, delicate finger food is served between two slices of bread in a culinary practice of ancient origins among the Greeks and other Mediterranean peoples.
There you go.
What is the difference between that statement, Luke, and the kind of sandwiches that I make?
They put an English name to it. I mean, we branded it. That's what we did. We branded it, maybe.
Maybe that's what we did. I was going to say that the mere thought of describing one of my sandwiches as delicate finger food between two slices of bread is a long way away.
A wedge on either side. Half a cow in the middle.
That's right. Not a green thing to be seen. Actually, it's normally coronation chicken. Ooh, so So obviously people have been putting things, but yes, maybe you're right. Maybe that's what it is. It's branding it and making it people thinking, oh, this is an easy thing to do. Let's do it, and making it fashionable because it duly takes off, you know. So I think the first time it appears in a cookery book, a recipe book, is The Lady's Assistant for Regulating and Supplying the Table, written by one Charlotte Benson in 1773. And she wrote, of all things in the world, sandwiches have the least need of explanation. Everyone knows how to make them, more or less. It's a great recipe. Yes. Book, obviously. Well, thanks.
Get on with it. Next, how to boil an egg. Get on
with it. Don't be such an idiot. Actually, on that, my father had to teach my sister how to boil an egg. She shouted out the stairs, I boiled the water for 4 minutes. What do I do now?
But you haven't put the egg in.
Put the egg in. I mean, can you believe it? Anyway, sorry, Ginny, for explaining that. Anyway, when it started off, Luke, this, you know, now the sandwich belongs to everybody. In those days, a sandwich did not really belong to everybody. It was a posh person's game. So it particularly got used. So, you know, if you're working the fields or whatever, you'd take something like a ploughman's lunch. And have a guess at when the ploughman's lunch is first mentioned and by who.
It's John Ploughman. And it's sort of, yeah, but it was on your episode the other day.
And still
I don't remember. In one ear, out the other. Samuel Johnson. No.
Piers
Plowman. There you go.
So you were right with Plowman. Piers Plowman. William Langland or whatever his name was. 1380.
So the Plowman's lunch is named after a bloke called Plowman rather than lunches that ploughmen ate.
Well, no, there are a few gaps in this threadbare claim. Okay, first of all, he doesn't call it a ploughman's lunch.
Right.
He describes something like him taking a bit of bread and some cheese when the ploughman goes ploughing. And of course, it is named after Piers Plowman because Piers Plowman is the ploughman and the author was William Langland. That's right, isn't it? Is it Langland? I feel I've got that wrong slightly.
For our international listeners, could you depict what a ploughman's lunch is? What it consists of, in case.
Alors, pour les Français, qui
pour tous les Français, I think mostly Americans.
So actually, I wasn't going to put this in, but I've read a lovely book. I recommend it to you. I'm sure you'll enjoy it by a chap called Adrian Bell.
Right.
Called Corduroy. Don't know if you know Adrian Bell. Anyway, he was a journo in the 1950s, and he wrote these lovely books about, you know, because he flees the capital and he goes and runs a farm for a while. He starts off as a labourer and blah, blah, blah. Lovely books, anyway. Anyway, enough gassing. Anyway, he writes something in the 1950s about going to his local pub, and he says something like, you know, if ever you go in there and say, I'll have a ploughboy's lunch, Harry, please, or whatever, within a few minutes, he says they've given you a good square hunk of bread, a lump of butter, and a wedge of cheese, and some pickled onions, which is now what I think we'd recognise as a ploughman's lunch.
Not the most sophisticated of meals, but very good.
Not the most sophisticated meal, but then, as we know, famously, the English are not the most sophisticated of cooks.
They're not.
Or indeed eats.
No. No.
Which, you know, I'd like to argue against, but, you know, bang to rights, really.
With difficulty.
Anyway, my point is that a sandwich is quite a posh thing. You have it at picnics, for example. It was quite a feature there, which I think actually comes from Germany originally. The first written reference we had to a picnic is from Germany, not France.
No, but it was a group picnic.
Ein picnic. Oh. Although it was a group of German.
That's actually, I think it was Italian. It was a picconico.
Yeah, it's actually, as you could hear from the way I pronounce it, it's actually got a K on the end of pick and a K.
Ah, yes. Yeah. General, yeah. And an umlaut on the I.
Yeah. There was a group of Francophiles in the early 19th century, about the first few years of the 19th century, who bring picnics back and make them popular. And of course, what is notable about the working classes? What do they not have that the posh people have?
Money. spare time.
Correct.
Leisure. Leisure. Yeah.
It's, yeah. You know, we get to the, I mean, there are festivals, I suppose, and so on during the year. But in terms of going away for a holiday and having time off or just, you know, taking a day off, that doesn't start happening until the 1860s. So,
yeah.
So it's a posh thing, posh person's game, which is not at the moment. Then you get a few changes. So then we get Anna Bedford. Do you know Anna Bedford? Duchess of Bedford. She... Right.
From Woburn Abbey fame.
Is that right? Huh? Yes, yeah, I suppose so.
Bedford.
Very good. Well, what happens is posh people start having their meals later in the day. So lunch, dinner, whatever you want to call it, used to be late morning, and you gathered all the tenants around you and all the rest of it. And then that gets later, and supper gets later till 8 o'clock. So you've got this long desert between lunchtime and supper time. And Anna Bedford says, we've got to fill this with something. And thus, afternoon tea is invented, not to be confused with high tea, obviously.
No. Just a little test here. Have you had your supper?
I have. Are you doing the PLU test?
I haven't.
Haven't you? Pop it.
No.
You must be so hungry. I've got some.
No. It's because I'm so posh. I'm so posh. We're not having supper till midnight.
Oh, I see. Yes.
No.
Right. So so that's that. So Anna Bedford, she invents afternoon tea. And I think you've got a few words to say later about the things that she eats. But then you get a lot more industrialization. So you get this faster working environment. You get people working inside. And the sandwich starts to move down the social scale, so much so that in 1851, the Victorian social commentator, Henry Mayhew, calculated the number of sandwiches that were sold on the streets of London every year. And what number do you think that would be?
25,000 every year. No, lots more than that. No.
36,000.
436,000 sandwich every year. That is
a lot of sandwiches.
A fact I hadn't considered before, but now I know.
And going back to that thing about the English not being very sophisticated in their cooking and eating, what do you think those sandwiches were?
Ham and cheese. Ham and cheese? Ham or cheese.
Just ham.
Just going too far. Garnishing the ham with cheese would just be... Too much for anyone.
At which point I can tell you about an anecdote about Ken and Daphne in our local many years ago. And we had a local.
Please do.
We used to go in every night. And every so often, and we'd normally put a baked potato in the pub before we came out, Jane and I, and think we'd have a quick pint and go to it. And in those days, the guys from the garage bought everybody a pint. So once they'd done that, you then had to buy all of them a pint. And so we tend to go back about, you know, I don't know, 11 o'clock, midnight, and to find us a charcoaled potato. So we did one day ask Daphne if she had anything we could eat. And she was there. She says, you can have a cheese sandwich, or cob actually, a cheese cob, a ham cob, or a ham and cheese cob. Which the whole pub said, you know, down at Witheridge Hill, you can get a tie now down at that pub, the Sun at Witheridge Hill. And she said, oh, it's all boiling the bag down there with complete contempt.
Fantastic.
Those were the days.
Yeah.
So 436,000. So we're getting, you know, it's becoming a much more widespread thing. In the 1860s, as I was saying, you get working time legislation. So, you know, which says you can't work more than a certain number of hours in a day, although I think it's 10 hours for crying out loud, so it's not that generous. And you have to have a certain number of days off a year. And so we get the arrival of leisure time for everybody and the arrival of, you know, things like the trip to the seaside and all the rest of it, which really takes off and becomes a big feature of Victorian life. So then things really begin to take off. The good old sarnie is not mentioned in America until 1837,
right?
When it's mentioned in some sort of book some sort of recipe book. And then that's all going well. They're all getting popular and all the rest of it. And then the last plank in the story is the revolution by a certain well-known brand retail outlet, which is Luke. Who am I talking about?
Marks and Spencer's.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Marks and Spencer's, well done. Did you know about the sandwich revolution on the hands of Marks and Spencer's?
No. I heard your episode.
A mate of mine, Davey, told me this when we were looking at Old Sarum, actually, and he was absolutely gobsmacked. I didn't know. So I thought everybody knew, basically.
Everybody knew that Marks and Spencer's, what? I think you have to tell us
that Marks and Spencer's made the sandwich market explode. What they did was they said, look, this is all very well, but basically going buying sandwiches on the streets of London is a bit crap because they're all a bit horrid. A, it takes forever because they're getting made up at the time, or they've been sitting there on the counter for about 3 days and the edges are curling up. And we all know about British Rail sandwiches, don't we? Can we remember those from our youth?
We can remember them from our youth. It was a while ago.
Yeah. Really not good. So they said, well, look, what we'll do instead, we'll make more exotic types of sandwich and we'll put it in a nice little packet with a cellophane see-through cover. So A, it stays fresh. B, people can take it out around really easily. And C, they'll have something a bit more exciting. And I mean, it seems like the most obvious idea and it absolutely goes bonkers. They trial it in five shops.
What year was this?
This is 1979, Luke.
Right. I've got a great photo that I'll share on the Patreon of a stack of sandwiches in an old sort of shop just sitting there wilting. Really nasty. Yes, packaging is a good thing.
That'll set the scene for why they did it. And what is the first Marks and Spencer's sandwich that they made?
They're going to go sophisticated. BLT.
No, although that'd be a good guess. But no, salmon and tomato, actually, which is, yeah.
Salmon and tomato? Yes, I don't want the salmon as well. But presumably the best thing since sliced bread. I mean, the bread slicing machine must be very revolutionary when it comes to mass production of sandwiches.
Well, that is a good point, actually, Luke, which I had forgotten to mention. So thank you for pulling me back.
Sorry.
The bread slicing machine is invented, I think, in the 1920s, think in America. And of course, and that's what really makes sandwiches take off in America, actually, because suddenly everything is so much easier. You know, you've got your nice processed white bread. It's in slices. So it's just dead easy. You know, just take your hunk of whatever and slap them together and oh, wow, you're cool.
You know where this is going, David? So the machine that made sandwiches happen was invented in America, but we're going to say it's a thing that made England. Sorry. No.
Well, we were already there. It's only the Americans who had to catch up. Remember, Henry Mayhew, 436,000 sandwiches on the streets of London, mate. Right?
Yeah. Pre-sliced bread.
Sliced bread, then it goes even pottier. And then, Marks and Spencer's taken to make it go doubly potty.
There you go. Yeah.
So one last question before we go on to the quiz section. Give me a guess of how many, this comes from the British Sandwich Association, how many sandwiches the average Brit is expected to eat in a lifetime?
18,000.
You looked at my notes?
No, I listened to your podcast episode about sandwiches.
Mustn't do this again.
Because I noted it because I thought that can't be true. I mean, we only live about 25,000 days, I worked out. So every Brit is eating a sandwich. Yeah.
Well, no, I just did. So you sat 360. Down and waited out.
I haven't done the division bit yet.
You sat not that.
No, but all I did was multiply 70 by 365. And some of the, these new phones that we have these days have got quite a lot of sort of computing power. You can do these things quite easily, you know. Yes, but so that's sort of like, you know, everyone's eating sort of two sandwiches every 3 days, every single Brit.
Throughout their lives. Well, I suppose it's an average, isn't it? So lots of people are going to eat more. Yeah. But I mean, I can't believe you're questioning the veracity of the words of the British Sandwich Association. I mean, no more august body can you ever imagine, surely.
I know. I read their annals every day.
Can't be questioned. So I think throw it open now a bit. I've got some quizzes for you, but do you have any thoughts about sandwiches, favourite sandwiches, you know, whatever?
Oh, yes. I've got, well, my favourite sandwiches would be a BLT, which, again, sounds very American. In fact, you have to have American bacon to make a really good BLT.
What is American bacon?
American bacon is that really sort of crappy, crispy, you know, streaky bacon. But it is.
I don't have a BLT. I'm going to take your word for it. I mean, I don't have a BLT because I don't like the L bit, but, you know. Or indeed the
the L gets in the way, right? Yeah. Oh, it's lovely. I love sandwiches, but I do think we're on quite tenuous ground trying to make out that the sandwich is the thing that made England. I do have a little sort of live experiment to conduct. This is my little test here to see quite how English you really are when it comes to sandwich consumption. Is this video recording as well, or are we just audio here?
No, we've only got audio, sadly.
We've only got audio. Right, well, I have to describe, say.
Audio description.
Here's one I prepared earlier.
So you prepared? Here, oh, good Lord. Well,
look at this. So what we have here, and so obviously, well, we've got two things. We've got here we have the most quintessential English sandwich possible, which is, of course, the cucumber sandwich prepared on some supermarket white bread, which will, you know, inevitably stick to your mouth, the roof of your mouth, and just a smear of margarine. But next to it, we have another sandwich, which is a Philly cheese steak sandwich. Which is so Philly cheesesteak is, you know, fine rump steak, sort of peppers and onions and stuff, and obviously cheese, and all plenty of stuff to give you a heart attack. All served on a sort of brioche roll with ketchup and proper American mustard. So, David, which of these sandwiches would you go for first?
Neither. First thing is, what you're offering me is one sandwich and one filled roll. So you're not actually offering me a choice of sandwiches.
It's called the Philly cheesesteak stat sandwich. It's a sandwich. That's what they call it.
It is wrongly named, which we'll come to. Reeve, that is not a sandwich you're showing me. That is a filled roll. In fact, I think you might call it a taco. Anyway,
No. It's in a brioche roll.
Yeah, it's not a sandwich, mate. It's just not a sandwich by any stretch of the imagination. I'm sorry. Having said that, the cucumber sandwich is the most vile thing known to man, because, of course, the cucumber is the most vile vegetable known to man.
So, but I mean, seriously, the Philly cheesesteak sandwich, I made 24 for my poker night on Friday, and they are absolutely amazing. I mean,
I'm sure they're fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there are two things about this, Luke. One is, I'm not coming on to the things that made England to argue in any way, shape or form that England has any superiority in terms of quality of food, okay?
No.
I mean, that would be podcasting suicide.
It would, yeah.
So that's one. The other thing is, you just haven't shown me a sandwich, so, you know, it's fine.
Yes, and actually, to be fair, if the whole point of the Earl of Sandwich was to keep your fingers clean... and in fact, we did exactly this playing poker on Friday, and we all had really sticky, horrible fingers. So it wasn't performing the keep your fingers clean job of a sandwich, that I can say. But bloody hell, sorry.
Sandwich, but you get
absolutely delicious, though.
I mean, I know this is a digression, but I've been trying to get a poker game together in my place for ages, and I can't find anybody who likes playing cards. Why have you invited me? Yeah.
Well, it's quite a closed group of the village poker, and we go to each other's houses and make fancy meals now. Yeah. Oh. It's my charity match. It's my way of giving my money away to the guys from the village. I am very bad.
Well, you can invite me along as part of your charity donation, because I'm even worse than you're going to be. Anyway.
Rubbish. Yeah.
So, I mean, that is the question that we will come to. What is it that defines a sandwich? Shall I give you a couple of definitions?
Existential sandwich definition. Yep.
Yep. The USDA, whatever DA stands for, uses the definition at least 35% cooked meat, no more than 50% bread for closed sandwiches, or at least 50% cooked meat for open sandwiches. Now, one thing I'd like to know about that is, what about vegans? And secondly, I'd like to note about that is, there is no such thing as an open sandwich. An open sandwich is bread.
Not a sandwich. Okay. Yeah.
Not a sandwich. So, you know, that sucks. But the British Sandwich Association are even worse, actually, because they define a sandwich as any form of bread with a filling, generally a sandwich.
Any form. Cold.
Any form. So that you could wrap bagels, but not burgers.
The Philly steak sandwich is any form. Is any form. Burgers, why not?
But the British Sandwich Association are wrong.
Ah, they're not so august as whoever they were august 10 minutes ago. They're no longer august.
I was being ironic.
Right. When?
When I said they were august.
Oh, okay. So
did he do your homework then? So let me give you a
question. The 18,000 is probably quite questionable as well. If they don't even know what a sandwich is, how can we trust their numbers? David, very I think we're on very shaky ground.
Hmm. Very good point. I'm not going to die on the hill of the stats. I'm really not.
Right.
Anyway, let me give you a questionnaire. Okay. The sandwich or not a sandwich quiz. Okay.
Right.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Trouble is, I don't know what a lot of these are, but anyway. A butty.
Sandwich.
Correct. Or it is in my view. When do you use, just to digress, when do you use the word butty and when do you use the word sandwich?
I don't use the word butty very much. Bacon butty. And chip butty, I would never touch a chip butty with a barge pole, but chip butty and bacon butty.
To be honest, chip butties are nicer if you eat them rather than using a barge pole.
Yes, true. But I don't eat them. I think they're revolting. Yeah.
No, they're not revolting. They're one of the finest, the apogee of English cuisine.
I think that's where you're going wrong.
Making the point, I've already made. Okay, so butter sandwich. Hot dog.
Sandwich.
No, not a sandwich. Absolutely not a sandwich. It's not two slices of bread. It's one roll, first of all, and it's cut. Not all the way through. So it's not a sandwich.
Right.
In my view.
It's sandwich. It's meat sandwiched between two bits of bread.
No, it isn't. It's stuffed into one piece of bread.
Oh.
Burger?
Okay. I'm not going to say sandwich.
All right, too. Although you'd be discarding the SpongeBob SquarePants.
Right, yes. But I do think that maybe this quiz is not objectively verifiable entirely.
Well, I have to say it's not verifiable at all. I mean, you know, the answers are a matter of opinion as opposed to a right and wrong.
Yes, and David Crowther's opinion in particular.
But generally speaking, as I tell Jane very, very often, I am always right.
Yes. Does she agree with that?
No. Moving on. So then burger. I mean, obviously not a sandwich served hot. A steak witch.
A steak witch? No, I have no idea what it is. Well, presumably it's a steak sandwich.
Yeah.
But then it's a sandwich.
Yeah, it's a sandwich. Give you that. Submarine.
Yellow or otherwise? No. Not a sandwich. Not a sandwich.
Not a sandwich. Well done.
Benefit
Luke.
Of the listeners. He's shaking his head. I'm getting prompts here.
not a sandwich. Correct. Same. A rat. No. I'm making no sign.
Okay. No, not a sandwich. He's
great!
Twitching.
You're getting better at this. Well done, you. A Dutch... Oh, dear. Beleg Brody. Probably.
Yes, a Dutch Beleg Brody. The last time I had a Dutch Beleg Brody, I thought, this is a fine sandwich. Did I?
Do you know what? I started this quiz and I have no idea what
Dutch just gonna go on with it.
Beleg Brody is. I'd like to formally apologise for that. I'm just getting an image up here on the interwebs. It looks like a sub to me. So, oops, not a sandwich.
So what you're saying is it has to be sliced bread to be a sandwich. Anything that's not sliced bread. It's not a sandwich.
Nah.
Sorry, I don't want to sort of cut you in your prime here, but isn't that...
Okay, I mean, it's got to be said, there are quite a few things on the list, which I should probably stop now. Well, did you do your homework, just to answer that question?
I didn't, no.
Didn't do your homework?
Okay. No, well, I listened to you.
This episode is cancelled. I sent you a link to the cube.
You didn't... Until 5 minutes before we actually started.
No, I didn't know it ages ago.
Oh, right.
Anyway, well, a cube did a very funny article, I thought. And they did a nice 3x3, actually, of what the main components are. I'm not going to repeat that here. But anyway, there's no problem that is not solvable in life with a 3x3, as you know. But they came down to a definition. Very nice. That one piece of bread with something on it is toast. So on that basis, a cheesecake is basically a piece of toast. Okay? Which I think makes sense because certainly it isn't cake, obviously.
Rowena's going to go absolutely fine for that. She'll let that one pass. There'll be no problems Rowena, at all with the listenership. Yeah. Cheesecake is now toast.
Yeah.
Your toast.
Yeah. Then a sandwich is two slices of bread, you know. A taco, three slices of bread. One piece of bread on three sides, open at the top. I'm not sure I'm going to go for all these because you have a picture without you having done.
And what about club sandwich? Club sandwich?
Club sandwich.
Yeah.
What is a club sandwich?
Is that a sandwich? Club sandwich?
Yeah.
A club sandwich is three pieces of bread. And with it's just got more stuff in it.
I think you know the answer to that, don't you?
You have bacon and lettuce and stuff like that at the bottom, and then you'd have another layer, so it's like a triple decker, basically. And then then you'd have sort of chicken and mayo, and it's gorgeous. Hmm.
Why are you even asking me this question? I mean, it's obviously not a sandwich.
Three
bits of bread. Normally, if you buy an open sandwich in a pub or something like that, you've got this hideous construction of stuff all over the place with a bit of salad on the side, some crisps and blah blah blah. It's not a sandwich, it's a meal.
Yeah, and you need to have something to hold it together, which presumably you would find horrifying if you've got to have a toothpick to go through it. Then
yes, quite. Oh, those silly cocktail sticks they're both. I don't know what the world's coming to, mate. Don't know what the world's
whatever
coming
next
to.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I forgot to say about John Montagu Earl of Sandwich. Is he's got this image of this roué, you know, this guy who's spending all his life gambling, all the rest of which why he needed a sandwich, blah, blah, blah. The very eminent naval historian, N.A.M. Rogers, who is much more to be believed than the British Sandwich Association, let me say, is absolutely convinced he's tripe because John Montagu the Earl of Sandwich built the 18th century English Navy, British Navy, which ruled the world. And so he was too darn busy to be sitting gambling. Probably have the sandwich for the reason we often have sandwiches, because you can eat it at your desk while you're working.
Can I just hark back for sort of real avid listeners of the things that made England? You've just admitted to losing an argument about 3 years ago with Royfield.
No.
Because you say that the Navy was built in the Elizabethan times. Whereas now you've just said that it was actually the Earl of Sandwich that built the Navy, which was obviously not Elizabethan times.
To be honest, Luke, I mean, I can see the point you're trying to make, but I did not say he invented the British Navy, did I? Anyway, because the English Navy, as you well know, was invented well before that.
Well, I very much sit on the fence, but I feel I should have be representing Roy Field's opinion here. It's only fair.
Why?
Why he's not here?
Then Royfield's views.
Poor Royfield.
Well, he was invited.
Was he?
Yeah.
This is very much not his sort of episode.
No, he doesn't do the food things.
No.
Apart from, you know...
the ones he likes.
Chips and and HP.
Yeah.
Actually, I have one more question of what is a sandwich on, what is not a sandwich.
Yeah.
A Geely piece.
Yeah.
Is that a sandwich or not?
A Geely piece? A Geely piece? I have no idea.
I don't know if I've pronounced it right. That is actually a sandwich. It's a Scottish jam sandwich.
Right. Fascinating.
So if there are any Scots listening, they could probably, they would be nice if they could correct my pronunciation.
Yeah.
Anyway, I recommend to everybody that they go onto the website or the post that we do for this and have a look at the cube, which answers all of these questions and demonstrates conclusively that despite SpongeBob SquarePants' view, a burger is not a sandwich, and that a cheesecake is toast.
A cheesecake, yes.
Okay. Well, I was just going to ask you what you think the most popular UK sandwich is.
Cheese and pickle.
Gonna have to hurry.
Cheese and pickle.
Sorry?
Cheese and pickle.
Peas doesn't even appear on the list, mate.
No, that my wife. That's what my wife's favourite one. She's got a specific one from Marks and Spencer's. It's got to be quite a common one. Or is it going to be bacon sandwich? Bacon sandwich.
Bacon sandwich. She doesn't appear on this list, which has got to be a travesty.
That can't be wrong.
Cheese, ham and cheese, ham salad, sausage, cheese and onion, egg and mayonnaise, that in that order.
Yeah, see, sausages in sandwiches doesn't work. They overwhelm the bread.
I think you're probably right. Wales Online, actually, another highly authoritative source.
Wales in a sandwich?
No, that would be interesting, yeah. That would be very Waitrose, wouldn't it? Whale sandwich, darling.
Japanese sandwich.
Chicken sandwich. Wales Online says chicken sandwich, egg sandwich, breakfast sandwich, which I must admit, you know, I think Wales got gone through a good one there. Club sandwich.
Yes, but all respect to our dear Fiona. I mean, this is the things that made England. Why are we referring to what they eat
because
in Wales?
I'm just, you know, getting a foreign view into this question.
Right, yeah. If we went to Career Online, we'd have bao buns.
Well, I was going to ask whether bao bun is a sandwich. It's not. No, clearly it doesn't. Isn't obviously. They've got a tuna sandwich. They've got something called a Reuben sandwich, which is, I think it's an American type thing.
I'll say the Reuben sandwich that nobody's heard of is more popular than a bacon sandwich.
Well, you know, I suggest that you state your objections to Wales Online, not to me, mate, okay?
Yes, I will be taking out with them.
Actually, a Reuben is a North American grilled sandwich composed of corned beef, Swiss cheese, sauerkraut, a Thousand Island dressings or Russian dressing, grilled between two slices of rye bread, blah, blah. I mean, it sounds absolutely delicious and fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. So how about Welsh rarebit? Is that a sandwich?
No, open, mate. Only one piece.
Oh, it's not open. No, it's not. No, it's not one piece of bread, isn't it? I thought it would be like a sort of. Well, I was going to be really poncy and say it's like a croque monsieur, but Welsh.
Le croque monsieur, ce n'est pas un sandwich, hein?
Le croque monsieur is a sandwich.
No, it's got hot cheese in it.
Yes, but it's
not a sandwich.
Bread, ham, more bread, sandwiched. And then some hot cheese on top. And one of the great things of the world.
Hot cheese on top. I mean, clearly not a sandwich. I'll tell you what that is. That is a croque monsieur.
That's a croque monsieur, oui. Yeah.
If it was a sandwich, it would be a croque sandwich. I mean, there's even pretending it's a sandwich is a croque.
Right, of something else.
I mean, very didactic, obviously. Who knows the answer to this question, even if that question is answerable. Yeah. Anyway, I think we probably blathered on enough, to be honest.
I think we possibly have. My little fun fact is that my friend Andrew's grandparents lived on Sandwich Golf Course in a house called Coldham.
Really? Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Is that royal sandwich, darling?
What, the golf course?
Yes.
I just think so.
Yeah, fantastic. It's not the pitch and putt around the corner.
No.
Excellent. Well, that's very good. That's great. They presumably they called the cold ham for that very purpose.
I don't know. No, I think it was like, but it was one word, like coldham.
Oh, I see. Oh, very
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Okay, top fact.
Yeah.
Right, so do we vote now? Does it go in cabinet?
Yes. Not from me, no.
Come on what grounds?
On the grounds that there's so many other things that could be sandwiches that are potentially nicer and scattered around the world. And just because we did a bit of sort of branding and then try to restrict it to sort of very defined definition, I don't think it's a thing that made England, no. No.
Come on, it's a travesty. People all around the world eat sandwiches now.
Yes, but people all around the world ate sandwiches before, and they would have eaten sandwiches anyway, even if the Earl of Sandwich hadn't had fussy fingers.
They didn't think they were sandwiches, though. They were eating something, they were wrapping or something else. Yes, now they're eating sandwiches.
Enjoying it a lot more than some dodgy with a cucumber sandwich. Not from me.
I mean, actually, in a rather hideous bit of puff from the British Sandwich Association, they said that we are the leading manufacturer of sandwiches in Europe. So we lead the world in sandwich manufacture. I cannot tell you how my heart swelled with pride, Luke.
But leading by number rather than by taste or decency.
I'm not at liberty. Actually, it's got to be said, Marks and Sparks sandwiches, in terms of manufactured sandwiches, pretty good.
Yeah, very good. Yes, but I'd still rather have a nice bocadillo or something like that with some proper jamón in it or something. Okay. Yes.
Okay. Sorry. You're so posh, aren't you? No, okay, well, that's really. Fine. You're obviously, I bow to your superior taste.
Right. Yeah. Well, as ever, we'll be throwing this open to a democratic vote.
We will indeed.
And that's the only way that this whole thing can be resolved.
Yes, you're quite right. Yes, put it to the people.
Yeah. Yeah, put it to the people.
I'm not going to accept the result if it's not the right one.
No, then we'll shoot the people and ask them to vote again.
Yeah, we'll send your people around.
Yeah, I've got people. Yeah, can I just add in a little plug for Intelligent Speech?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, go ahead.
So Intelligent Speech 2023 will be happening on November the 4th. We have all sorts of great speakers, including Daniele Bolelli of History on Fire, Sebastian Major of Our Fake History, and Rebecca Larson of Tudor's Dynasty. And you can find out all about it and, of course, purchase tickets at intelligentspeechonline.com. And also, let's not forget that the Things That Made England has a very poorly maintained Patreon page. That's TTME, which we really need to give a bit of love to. And yes, I will be posting pictures of the Steve's Shake sandwich versus cucumber debacle. Sadly, without indeed. David's, I can't believe that you wouldn't have gone straight for the Philly cheesesteak sandwich.
Well, I'd have gone straight for the Philly cheese, not sandwich, yeah. Absolutely, in terms of eating, because cucumber is an abomination in the eyes of the Lord. But, you know, it's not a sandwich. It's the only problem I have.
Right, yeah. It's called a sandwich.
Right. Yeah. Well, look, that's been enormously good fun.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. Brilliant.
Yes, and vote everybody on Facebook. We'll put a post up and do a link to Intelligent Speech as well. And vote.
Indeed.
Thanks for listening, everybody. It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
And these are the things that made England.
And St. George!
These are the things that made England.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.